Okay.
Maybe we move on to...
Yes, Gustavo.
Thank you. So we will now move on to agenda papers 12A, B, and C. So at this meeting in October, the board decided to propose a narrow scope amendment to IS-12. The proposed amendment would narrow the scope of the initial recognition exemption in paragraphs 15 and 24 of IS-12, so that it would not apply to the extent that, on initial recognition of a transaction, an entity would recognize equal amounts of deferred tax assets and liabilities. We included two papers for this meeting. Agenda paper 12B discusses transition and other aspects of the proposed amendments. Agenda paper 12C discusses due process. We will start with agenda paper 12B. Paragraph 7 to 24 presents our analysis of the proposed transition requirements for entities already applying IFRS standards. We think that, except for assessing whether the requirements to recognize a deferred tax asset are met, applying the proposed amendments retrospectively would not be unduly difficult. So we recommend that entities apply the proposed amendments retrospectively applying IS-8, but suggest permitting entities to assess whether the requirements to recognize a deferred tax asset are met only at the date of transition. We also recommend providing the same transition relief for first-time adopters and permitting early application of the amendments. Finally, Appendix B includes our analysis of particular questions raised by board members during the board's October meeting. We recommend no changes to the proposed amendments with respect to those other matters. I would now like to pause and direct your attention to the questions in page 8 and ask whether you agree with our recommendations.
Harry.
Gustavo, first of all, congratulations on once again making a challenging subject with lots of double and triple and quadruple negatives as understandable as it possibly could be. As the troublemaker who asked for some of the additional work about the realizability of the deferred tax assets and the interaction mm-hmm. with how far this project went, I appreciate the additional work. I have a nagging sense, but it's instinct rather than knowledge, that we could hear that that the amendments we're proposing are not complete because they don't address that one piece. But I think your reasoning in paragraph A18 of the paper is reasonable. And so it is important to me that we have a good discussion and the basis for conclusion, you know, as you set out here, of what we considered and why we thought it was, you know, such an outlier circumstance that we didn't need to extend the complexity of the amendment
sure.
to address this, so that we hopefully if people disagree with what we propose, they have that as a flag and something to react to. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a reasonable outcome.
Anne.
I agree with the staff recommendation. My question is just about our proposal here to make the position optional rather than mandatory. So we're saying that entities are permitted to do this, to access the transition relief, but it's not mandatory. And you've given us an explanation as to why that's the case. And as I read and thought about that, I thought it was about the trade-off between if we make something mandatory, potentially things are more comparable, versus in this case, you thought about the costs if we were to do that. And the costs seem to come into two areas. One area was the cost for people that already had a policy that aligned with IAS 12, where we were trying to get to. And if they had to go back and reconsider that, that seemed to be a counterproductive thing. I just wonder whether we've got enough here about the evidence that supports either position. Because have we got enough evidence that says we believe it has to not be a mandatory transition requirement? Have we got enough evidence to support our view that it would be imposing too many costs on people?
I guess just when we did
outreach on this. We did see that there was a lot of diversity in this, so there are a lot of entities who are aligned with the policy that we are trying to get everyone onto. So in that sense, it would be a big cost for those entities, and we know from our outreach that there are several of those entities already in there, so there is a significant cost there. So when we looked at this, we just thought on balance, the benefits of making it mandatory would not outweigh the cost of doing so. So that's where we landed. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think I was just going to relay that in terms of almost the reason that this has gone all the way through to becoming a narrow scope amendment is almost because of the work that was done at the committee's level and looking at this, I was surprised as well, but almost the outreach that came back showed this is an area that there really were sort of two very different ways of accounting for fair taxes for these transactions today. So I think I was just going to reiterate that we know it could affect some for sure on that. And I suppose the other piece of work that Gustavo and Java did was to, of course, work through mechanically to work out if you were today already applying IS 12 in a way that the proposed amendments would kind of confirm, would there possibly be a change that you'd have to do? And I suppose mechanically we worked out, yes, we thought that was possible. So it was the combination of those two pieces that sort of led to our recommendation.
I suppose my point was just making clear that we've got that evidence, because on the face value, making something optional allows less comparability. But we've got particular reasons in this case for doing it that way, and that's the previous research that you've done. Yeah. We need to make sure we communicate that.
And John?
Yes. I agree with staff's proposal. I think providing transition relief for both cases can reduce the implementation cost and without losing the useful information. I just have one question about how to illustrate the reasons why we provide transition relief, or in which situation transition relief should apply. The paragraph 13 and 14 address that if an entity is unduly difficult to assess the recoverability requirement retrospectively, I'm thinking that because we're using the unduly difficult, it seems a new term to me, so I would like to recommend that if we have no different intention to address this, maybe we should use in the term unduly cost or effort, which was widely used in other standards. So I would like to recommend using ideally cost and effort if we have no any other different intention behind this.
Okay. Any other comments? Are we ready to? Can we answer all three questions at once? Mm-hmm. Yes.
14.
Okay. Go ahead. No problem.
We will now move into agenda paper 12C. This paper sets out the due process steps taken in developing the proposed amendments and asks the board to confirm that it is satisfied that it has complied with the applicable due process requirements. Accordingly, I would like to direct your attention to the question on page 3, in paper 12C.
Okay. So you recommend a comment period of at least 120 days. That means it could also be 240 days? Or are you recommending 120 days?
120-ish. Basically, only to explain if it hasn't come out. We've learned over time, we used to have at times the recommendation always saying we recommend 120 days. And what we worked out is, strictly speaking, if somehow that landed on a Sunday, or there might be just, that it might make sense just to add on one, add on, by the way, not take away, but add on a day so that it ends up being a Monday or a Tuesday. So we now say there's a reason.
Okay, 120 days. Yes.
Absolutely. 14.
Any dissenters? Not the case. Permission to ballot?
14.
Right. So, well, we're well ahead of schedule, but we have to wait till 1 o'clock for insurance. Not to disappoint our many fans. Insurance fans. So, we suspend the meeting until 1.